for a Higgs. And electrons and muons are the cleanest. So it's a very clean, very nice event. And that's the channel that I was working on a couple of years ago. So I'm fond of it. So a couple of years ago, speaking of, so that was the discovery. We did this with 5 inverse femtobarns at 8 TeV and about 5 inverse femtobarns at 7 TeV. And at that time, we reached a significance level for the discovery, for the paper. It was 6 sigma. And you'll see how much things have changed since then. And I just wanted to post, so, you know, we're not hearing about the Higgs anymore much in the press, but then it was almost the person of the year. And there was a poll, and it reached sort of 20%. So this is like Olivia Chow type level of support, which is respectable. The reason I wanted to show you this is it's kind of interesting science journalism. So it says, but not until last summer that a team of researchers, Rolf Hoyer, Joseph Candela, Fabiola Genetti, at last sealed the deal, and in so doing, finally fully confirmed Einstein's general relativity. You didn't know that. Now you do. Yeah, so, all right. So there's, like I said, there's been a lot of progress since we've published our paper. Then we just called it, we didn't even mention the Higgs. We just said, we observed something while searching for the standard model Higgs boson. So that was the title. It was sort of conservative. And then we collected the rest of the data in 2012. And at the conferences, we kind of rushed, right, to analyze the full data. And then we had the preliminary results on couplings and things like that, and on spin and CP properties. And so after that, there was a press release from CERN that says that this new particle is a Higgs boson. And we had two important papers then, one on couplings and one on spin and CP. After that, people were burnt out because they'd been rushing for like 2 years to discover this and analyze. But the work picked up again soon after. And then we did detailed analysis of this data set. So the detector was recalibrated. Reconstruction and analysis techniques were improved significantly. And as you'll see, the latest results are in general much better than the results we presented in early 2013. Now, regarding this evolution from we've observed something, we don't know what it is, to it's a Higgs boson, I've noticed recently, without people making a big fuss or case, that people are calling it now the SM Higgs boson. I went to a workshop recently, and they asked me to give a talk on the SM Higgs, which is the Higgs that we're studying. And there was another talk on the BSM Higgs searches. So of course, you can never conclude that what you found is the standard model Higgs boson. You just need to find a deviation. The only thing we can do is just demonstrate that it's consistent or not with that hypothesis to within some uncertainty. And as I was saying, as we'll see in the next slide, we have a very predictive theory, and the Higgs happens to sit where we can make many, many measurements. And so it needs to survive many experimental tests so that we keep calling it the SM Higgs boson, and maybe we'll find that it isn't in the short term. And just to illustrate my point, I mean, now it's one of the bosons in the PDG. And also within ATLAS, we have this nice table of total production cross-section measurements for Ws, for Zs, tops, blah, and dibosons. And recently, we've added the Higgs in there. So for various production modes. Oh, yeah, so that's my talk. So you will see. So now the Higgs group used to be a pure search group. We were searching for the standard model type Higgs and other Higgses out there. And now it has a dual personality. So one part is focused on precision measurements of the particles' properties, like the mass, the couplings, CP, et cetera, et cetera. And we are also looking for some of the rare decays that we should see if it's a standard model Higgs. But we also have, we're still in search mode, so we're looking for additional Higgses. We're looking for the evidence of a Higgs in decay chains, and I'll come back to that a little later. And other rare decays that we should not see, like lepton flavor violating couplings or flavor changing neutral currents in the decay of the top, and invisible decays of the Higgs. There are invisible decays of the Higgs in the standard model when you have the two Zs going to all neutrinos, but apart from that, you know, it should not decay to invisible particles. We should see no significant branching ratio. So this you've seen before. So these are the main production mechanism at the LHC, and we're sitting sort of here. It's dominated by gluon fusion. The event that we were looking at the beginning would be a candidate for weak boson fusion. So this is about an order of magnitude less, but you get two forward jets. And when you calculate the mass, the very mass of the two jets, it's quite high, very high, and you can clean up the background significantly, but we get less stats, and then there's associated production. And right now, I won't talk about this today, but we're almost there. We'll have a papers on TTH production, which is the lowest cross-section that you see here. But again, these are very spectacular final states. You can have you have two tops plus a Higgs. The Higgs can go to, say, ZZ, and it's full of leptons and B jets. Now, for the Higgs decays, we've been a bit lucky, at least on the experimental point of view, because we're sitting at a point where we can make many measurements. Had the Higgs been heavier, you know, maybe 170 or 180, the only thing we would be measuring is WW and maybe a bit of ZZ. But the fact that it sits here allows us to do a bunch of measurements like BB, tau tau, gamma gamma we've seen, WW, ZZ, etc. And at the same time, it allows us to use essentially all of the detector. And we need to push, you know, electron, muon, tau, gamma, missing ET, reconstruction to get at all these things. But we have a bunch of measurements to do. So it's a pretty rich field. Just to remind you that this detector was, in fact, designed to find the Higgs over a wide range from, say, 100 GeV to 1 TeV. And the electromagnetic calorimeter, one of the main designing criteria, was to find the two photons. In Canada, we built the forward calorimeters. So I worked on this 20 years ago, actually, before it existed, with general simulation. And what we wanted to make sure was, in a high pileup environment, we could reconstruct the forward jets from VBF. So everything here was designed to find the Higgs. And since it sits at a place where we can use all of its capabilities, then we're kind of lucky. Now there's a challenge at the LHC, which is the amount of collisions that we need to deal with. Now the Higgs is produced, as you know, very weakly. We don't have many of them, and so we need to produce many collisions. Right now we've used a sample of data in Monte Carlo that is over 120 petabytes. We get typically 30 collisions per event at high luminosity. And for a state that's at 125 GeV, it's pretty low in mass compared to, say, 7 or 8 or even 13 TeV. And so we need to worry about all of the energy that goes in the calorimeter or the tracker. We need to resolve, find which one of those collisions is interesting, and then try to subtract everything else. And one thing that we've learned how to do is to use our tracker more efficiently to do this. So we have much better resolution for the reconstruction of missing transverse energy, and also for the reconstruction of jets than we thought we would have. But this is years invested in this reconstruction. So we took data at a trigger rate of around 400 hertz, and this is likely to double in the coming years. Okay, so I'll start with some of the relatively recent results. So this was just published in PRD. So this is our final mass measurement from run one. Initially, our first time we measured the mass in two channels, there was quite a significant discrepancy between the old the ZZ and the gamma-gamma results. So we measured 124 with an uncertainty of about 0.7 for ZZ, and gamma-gamma was around 127. And so in the last year, because of this discrepancy, but we would have also pushed the effort on the recalibration anyway, but we wanted to understand if there wasn't something systematic about this discrepancy, or if it was statistical. And this work allowed us to substantially reduce our uncertainties. So for ZZ, for instance, we had a systematic uncertainty of order, say, 300 MeV, and now it's dropped to 60 MeV. And on the gamma-gamma side, you can see that the initial uncertainty, systematic uncertainty, was quite large, and we've reduced this by more than a factor of 2. So in the recalibration, we found a potential shift in the way that photons are reconstructed. So we know the energy scale very, very well because we have so many Z bosons going to electrons. So if the Higgs decay to electrons, we would know it very, very well. But photons in the calorimeter, it starts in its interaction a little bit later. And so the energy scale is slightly different. And we have a calorimeter that is segmented longitudinally and is sensitive to that. And so after we recalibrated, the result changed a little bit by 800 MeV. And the expected mass shift was 450. So we expected it to go down. So this is our final result, and we have very well now measured Higgs mass to within about 3 per mil. And we're in the process of combining with CMS. The value of CMS I don't have here, but it's very close. It's 125.08, if I remember. So we're within a sigma of each other. So we had an interesting feature in the mass distribution. So we know what the resolution of the calorimeter should be, and the width of the that we had from the fit was smaller than the resolution, and this can happen just by statistical fluctuations. Like I've measured the top mass in different channels, and sometimes you expect some width of this distribution, it just happens to be narrower. And you're lucky, and you're going to get a smaller statistical uncertainty when that happens. It also happens that it's sometimes wider. And in this case, we know that it was a statistical fluctuation because the calorimeter cannot measure better than that. And so this is more in line with what we expect. But if you do pseudo experiments, you will have an expected uncertainty, statistical uncertainty from the width. But this can vary, from one experiment to the other.
So the photon excess business has gone
away. I have a slide on this, but yes. unfortunately, well, it depends what you want. But these values are from the mass measurement. So this is what we measure. The signal strength, I should back up and say that a signal strength of 1 represents what you would expect from the standard model at a given mass. We've measured at the measured mass of gamma-gamma, this is what we get, 1.3, so it's consistent with 1. And for ZZ, at its measured mass, we get 1.66. In a few slides, you'll see that the coupling values are slightly different because we measure at a combined mass, and we measure in many different categories. So in this case, the result will both results go down a little bit because you pulled them off their peak. That's one of the reasons. Okay, so this is our new result. And then the compatibility before was at the level of 2.4 sigma, and now it's gone down to 2 sigma. So we'll keep measuring this in run 2, but it's as far as we can tell after a lot of work, this is a statistical fluctuation. Okay, so so I'm going to talk about this channel in particular now for the coupling. So the production, we look at all the production modes, so the production through a top loop or anything else that would sit here. This is VBF, vector boson fusion, associated production. And as I said before, we have a calorimeter that's designed to look for this kind of signal. It's a great discovery final state because you have excellent mass resolution. And the background is fairly easy to figure out. It's just the sidebands, and you fit on top of that. And it's particularly interesting because it deals with two loops on the production end and on the decay end, where you can put some kind of colored particle here other than the ones from the standard model. It could change the rate, but you can do also the same in the decay loop. It can go up or down. And so it's potentially sensitive to new physics. So for our new result, we redid the energy calibration. We improved the energy resolution by a factor of 2. The experimental systematics we also reduced. So this is the photon identification and the isolation, uncertainty on the integrated luminosity. And then we retuned the selections. So after 2013, we reblind the analysis, and then we start playing around without looking at the result. And once we're done with the recalibration and all these new things, we look again. Okay, so the analysis was reblinded, and we expected an improvement of the order of 10%. And the way we go through this, and this is true for all of the analyses, is we separate them into many signal regions, depending on production type. Okay, so in this case, you can look for TTH. So if you have lots of jets, you have B jets, and some leptons, you can qualify in this category. If you don't have any leptons, but you have lots of jets and some B jets, you're here. If that's not the case, you keep going. If you have two leptons, could be this. If you only have one lepton, it can go here. If you have a lot of ET miss, it could be the Z going to two neutrinos, or maybe you lost a lepton. If you don't qualify, but you see two jets that are consistent with the mass of a W or a Z, you can be in the VH category. If the mass of the two jets is very high, you can qualify in VBF. And if you fail all of these, then you go into the untag, so the main production mode. And so then we keep categorizing the event because we have different parts of the detector that give us very good resolution. And also, depending on whether the photon converts or not. And so we break that down into a set of categories. And that allows us to improve the sensitivity of the analysis. So to give you an estimate of what is the signal composition in various categories, so this is, for instance, TTH leptonic. So it dominates this mode, and for hadronic also. And you see that in many cases, so when we have a VBF event, there's still a lot of contribution from the main production process, which is an order of magnitude larger. Okay, so these are never completely pure, and we need to take that into account as a background when we're trying to measure the production cross-section for VBF. And so with the full coupling analysis, with all the categories, we end up with this result. So this one went down significantly from the last time. And it's now it's quite compatible, 1.17 plus or minus 0.27. Okay, and you can see the results in various categories. So in the case of TTH, we don't really see much. We'll need to wait for run two before we can make a measurement in this final state. And GGF, you see the uncertainties are quite small. So this we measure quite well, and this is the result. In the plane where you have the gluon fusion mode and the VBF mode, we're sitting here. And this is the prediction from the standard model. Okay, so I'm going to move on to ZZ to 4 leptons. And so here the name of the game is a lepton reconstruction. These events are very, very rare. They're golden, but they're rare. They don't have a lot of, like I said, very low backgrounds. We have very good mass resolution, which helps. We need to keep the lepton efficiencies high. And then we added some improvements. So here also we did better with the muon momentum calibration in the EM. We improved the reconstruction of electrons. And here we include also final state radiation. So if you have photons that are far away, we test to see if they could have come from a lepton. And that helps our resolution. We add also a multivariate discriminant to help us separate the background for this category. And we added some new categories that we didn't have before. So again, we proceed through a basic selection where you ask for four leptons. And then you ask whether you have two jets in the event, and if they're high mass, if they're or whether they're low mass, or perhaps you've seen a lepton. And if not, you fall into this, this category. And we train a boosted decision tree to separate the signal from the main background, which is just the production of two Z bosons. And you see how the BDT output looks like for the signal. So normally, the signal should be high, an output of around 1, and the mass is around 125. So you see how the signal should look like. And for the background, you see that most of it sits at low BDT output. And there's no resonance, of course, at 125. And here is a plot of the signal composition in various categories. And one thing I just want to show you is that in this case, since we do not have a lot of statistics, this selection is very, very loose. So our VBF category is about 50% VBF. And in the data, we have one candidate.
Sorry, in CMS, that's the only have 16%.
Roughly, yeah. Well, the, plus the, yeah, in the peak. Well, we use three channels. I'll show you one slide on this. So the results for all of the categories together is given here. So we get 1.4. So this is a little high, but still very compatible with one. And you see how the events cluster. So they you have a nice cluster where you expect signal around 125, and the rest is spread a little bit everywhere. And yeah, a couple of pictures. So here you see a four muon candidate event. So the tracks go through the calorimeter and on and hit the muon chambers. Here's another one where you have four electrons. So these are represent. They represent the energy in an EM calorimeter. And we've started also to measure differential distributions. So this will get much better as we accumulate the statistics, because as we were saying, for ZZ, we don't have a a lot of statistics. But here you have some of the plots that we've made in terms of N jets for gamma, gamma, and ZZ. And this is the PT of of the Higgs system, or gamma, gamma, or the PT of the four leptons. And it suggests that perhaps the PT is a little harder than the predictions. And this is from our recent publication. So these are some of the variables that we considered. One here is where our measurement sits, and you see the uncertainty, and all the colors are different models. So you see, in general, it's pretty compatible. So first moment means the mean, and there's some tension in some places, and it could be, you know, the fact that this are not perfect Monte Carlos, or it could be something else. And here, that's the second moment, also the distribution. Okay, I'm going to switch to WW. So this one is quite fresh. Has the advantage of this channel is the large branching ratio. So this is 23%. So it's the second largest branching ratio. So you get lots of signal events. However, if you go for the all leptonic final state, you get neutrinos. So you can't really reconstruct the full event because of those neutrinos, and so then the missing ET reconstruction becomes very important. So we've spent a lot of time optimizing this reconstruction so that we can construct a transverse mass that takes into account the leptons we see and the missing energy. And here, what we would like to see is a very as sharp as possible a transverse mass. And I'll show you the plots in a second. The one thing I should say also is that the way that this analysis is done, the spin zero nature of the Higgs is taken into account, because if the W's decay through V minus A, the two leptons will tend to be going in the same direction as the event that you saw at the beginning. So when we do some spin studies, we need to change the selections, because this is basically focusing on spin zero kinematics. So we need to relax those selections. And here, for this final state, you get lots of backgrounds that you need to understand quite well. There's the non-resonant WW background. You have the top that has B jets, but you get the same final state in terms of leptons. So you try to ask that there be no jets, and if you see jets, they should not be B-tagged. You can also get a fake lepton from jets, so you get a W plus jet background, and then Z going to tau tau is also a potential problem, because you can get different flavor leptons, so this is a rather clean signal in principle. And then we have a bunch of dibosons. Well, you'll get two leptons and neutrinos, including a gamma star that can give you two photons, and here the gamma can convert, give you an electron. I won't go through this in great detail, because it's a very complicated analysis. So you'll see very soon a big paper, it's about 70 pages long, that details everything we've done. But the basic idea is that as I mentioned before, we spread the signal into different bins that have different background compositions and different signal to background ratios. So the best, the most sensitive one will be one where we have no jets and emu, different flavor. But we also look at same flavor. So here we'll get Z plus jets background, Drellian. We also have a VBF category, or two-jet category, where we try to separate the GGF contribution in the VBF category. Okay, we use a set of topological selections that include the invariant mass of the two leptons, which should be small because they're close together, and one of the W's is virtual, so the PT is low, and the delta phi, the angle between the two, which is related, and the PT of the two leptons. We extract the signal from a fit to the transverse mass, and we bin this in bins of subleading lepton PT and MLL. Okay, so these have different signal to background ratios and different background composition. If you go very low in lepton PT, you get a lot more W plus Jets background, for instance, and so you want to separate that category out to maximize your sensitivity. Here I show some background control regions. So here you see what the WW control region looks like. So we normalize ourselves to what we see in the data. This is for zero jet and one jet. And this is our top control region. And all these control regions talk to each other in the big fit. You know, we fit the amount of top here, which is reflected in what we see here, et cetera. And what you have up there is our same charge control region. So here we can normalize part of the background that is charge symmetric. Okay, so the new results are that we've reached now 6 sigma in this channel alone. So if you remember, that's what we had when we discovered the Higgs, but we required 3 channels to do it. And we have an observed significance of about 3 sigma for the VBF production. And the combined signal strength is given here, 1.08. And this is our most, in terms of signal strength measurement, this is our most precise of all. So the ZZ, in principle, eventually should do better, but we need more statistics. And you see here, the transverse mass distribution, and if we subtract the background, you see that there are hundreds of events in this peak. Okay, so a quick word on spin CP analyses. So we published a paper, like I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, in 2013, where we were trying to see if it was indeed a spin zero particle, and we did it with 3 different channels. Gamma-gamma, where we used the fit to the cosine theta star distribution. And ZZ is very useful here because we have the full kinematics of the event, and we use all the angles that you see here in the reconstruction. However, it's limited by the number of events. So in run 2, we'll do much better. And WW, we need to change the selections that I mentioned before. And we use the MLL then, and PTLL, delta phi, missing ET, in a boosted decision tree to determine what is the favored scenario. And we've tested different ones from negative 0 minus, so negative parity, to some spin 2 models, and they were all excluded at about 95% confidence level. So since then, and those will be papers that should appear in the next month or two, we've focused on CP mixing. So instead of just doing the crude, fully CP odd, then we consider mixtures. Yep.
How many events on ZZ star or retros do you expect in the next 2 years because the inverse vector bias is going up?
Yeah. Well, if you expect, say, a dozen in run 1, we get a cross-section increase of at least 2. So every inverse femtobarn is twice as that. And so for every 20 inverse femtobarn, we should get about 25.
So you could maybe get 100.
We get 100 in the next 2-3 years.
This means we can use, we don't need to use the decision tree. We can do more central.
Yeah, well, we don't necessarily need a boosted decision tree. In fact, we have 2 analyses that we do, and one is a matrix element analysis. And so some of the results in the coming paper that you'll see use the matrix element analysis, and the other the BDT. So normally the matrix element just has everything in it, right? All the angles, etc. It's more, for me, it's more intuitive, because the BDT, you don't know exactly what it's doing. unless you start looking at how it cut the face space. But with the matrix element, we already are using it. Yeah. Okay, another new result is Higgs to BB. And this one is we care a lot about because the branching fraction is of order 55 to 60% for a Higgs mass of 125 GeV. And in our coupling fits, we need this input. And here, it's a challenging final state because there are very large backgrounds, so W plus W and Z plus jets. And the Higgs mass resolution is not what you find for four leptons or two photons. And we need good B-tagging efficiency and fake rejection to pull the signal out of the background. And in this case, we split it into different production and decay processes. Okay, so you can go through associated production of the Z, the W, and then the Z can decay either to two leptons or two neutrinos. And so we have three analysis channels that are split into different categories of the PT of the vector boson, and then also split into the number of jets, two or three. And then we use discriminating variables that are put into a boosted decision tree, and we use a B-tagging algorithm that is semi-continuous, that it returns different, we have different categories for this. So you can ask for very tight, so TT is for tight, means very stringent requirements and very low fakes. You can have medium and low, and all these events end up in these categories. So we don't throw anything away, but this one obviously will be the most sensitive. And relative to the previous result that we have a 50% improvement in sensitivity here. There are many challenges that we need to address. One of them is from the Monte Carlos. If you take the best Monte Carlos out there right now, and you look at the PT of a W in W plus jet events, you see that it's not very well modeled, and similarly, the delta phi between the two jets is not well modeled. So what we end up doing is reweighting of the V plus jet MC based on what we see in the data. So when we do that, we can look after we've done that at what it does to the delta phi distribution, and it appears to correct it relatively well. And so this BDT analysis is split in all the channels, and the different channels will use different sets of variables, and this is illustrated here. And so I'm just picking, say, one of them. So this is MBB, and this one is delta R between the two Bs. And you can see the agreement here and here, but we look at all of those variables and also correlations between them, because if you're going to put them in a multivariate analysis, you need to be confident that those correlations are also well modeled. And any residual mismodeling will go as a systematic uncertainty. So this is a complicated fit model where we have 11 control regions that are used to normalize various backgrounds. We have 27 signal regions, and we consider 170 nuisance parameters or systematic uncertainties that cover normalizations and shapes of distributions, et cetera, et cetera. The main systematic uncertainties come from W plus B or C, the composition and the shapes. And there's also a big component in the signal acceptance and the jet energy resolution. Jet energy resolution is important because the MBB variable is quite important. We're looking for some bump at the 125. And to do better in run two, we really need to improve the Monte Carlo modeling. So that's work that's going on with some of our theory friends. So once you have this complicated fit, if you want to believe it, you have the opportunity to do an interesting test. So you can look at, instead of the Higgs and the Z, for instance, you can look at the decay of the Z to BB instead of the Higgs to BB, right? So you should be able to see this if you focus your training for your BDT at the Z resonance instead of the Higgs resonance. And this is the result that you get. So what you expect here, or what is something close to one, and we measure something that's a little low, 0.74, but again, a little within almost the sigma of one. So this we take as a validation of the model. And the result for the analysis, for the MVA analysis, is given here in the various channels. And you see that for a zero lepton, it actually goes negative. And the others are quite close to one. So there seems to be some fluctuation here. And the average is then 0.5 plus 0.4 minus 0.4. Again, that's consistent with one. And we have a simpler analysis that's just a regular cut-based analysis. And the value we get is 1.23 at 8 TeV. Now, we only did this cross-check at 8 TeV. So if we look at the result of the MVA at 8 TeV, this is the comparison.
What's the sigma?
I didn't put it. Maybe I have it on the next slide. Yeah, expected is something like 2.5. I'll tell you right after the talk. I may have it a bit later also. So the last channel that I'll discuss in our big five is tau tau. So this is another challenging one that has large backgrounds. It's sitting pretty near the Z to tau tau resonance. It's rather sensitive to pileup because you have neutrinos in the final state, and that was an extra challenge in run two. But this is more sensitive, as you'll see, than the BB analysis. So you get access here to the Yukawa, and also to down-type fermions, if you can get at it. So this analysis is also divided into different channels, depending on what happened to the tau. You can have two taus that decayed hadronically, or semi-leptonically, or completely leptonically. The discrimination is coming mainly from the tau-tau mass reconstruction. And we have an algorithm that improves the resolution by about 15 to 20%. And then we look at two categories. One is the boosted category. So this would be mostly GGF production with a jet. And here the PT of the tau-tau system is an excellent variable. And if we have two jets, then we fall into the VBF topology. And here the delta eta between the two jets, or the invariant mass of the two jets, is also a good discriminant. And you can see here what it would look like for the signal with respect to the background. Now the backgrounds, the way we deal with them, so the main one is Z to tau tau. So here we use a trick where we use our Z to mu mu data that has all of the jet activity and you know, forward jets, et cetera. And we take out the muons from as tracks and also as calorimeter deposits. They deposit just a little bit of energy. And we replace those leptons by taus that are decayed by the simulation. So what you gain is basically the entire underlying event and all the jet kinematics for free here. Okay, and here you have missing mass calculator. So this is the mass of the tau tau system, how it looks like. And so this is the data. This is an internal test within the Monte Carlo, so a closure test in the Monte Carlo to show that it works. But you also have other backgrounds to worry about. Again, W plus jets and TT bar and QCD for tau tau in particular. And so the result is given here, 1.4 plus plus or minus 0.4 when you do add these two in quadrature. And the significance is 4.5 sigma, so it's almost observation level with 3.5 expected. We also have a cut-based cross-check analysis that is a simpler analysis where you just fit the m-tau-tau distribution, and it gives a very consistent result around 1.4. Here you have a representation of all these categories that we have in terms of log of the single over b. And so these are the most sensitive channels that you see. You see some excess over what the background predicts. That is quite significant. At the bottom, I showed some just for the VBF, for the various tau decay channels, what the result is for a fit at 1.4. So this is what the fit likes, essentially.
So yeah.
The mu? For us? No, but the B used to be negative at some point. But for us, the tau was, the last result was 0.7, plus or minus 0.7. Okay, a quick word on some rare decays. Mu mu is something that we should eventually see. So you see here the amount of signal that we expect. This is a log scale. So there's a huge background, but it's a smooth background. And so eventually, you know, you should see a tiny bump appear. And we haven't seen it yet. We have some limits of order 7 times the standard model prediction. The one thing that's kind of cute is that if the couplings were universal, like for the Z going to Z decaying to tau tau or mu mu, if it were universal, then we would have seen it for sure, given that we see tau tau, right? So it would be 260 times larger. We also look at Z gamma, and here we get a limit of around 10 times the standard model, and you can see this is times 50 in this case, and eventually we should be able to see something pop up if we're dealing with the standard model. Okay, I don't have a lot of, maybe I'll skip the off-shell couplings because it's a little complicated, but I can explain it to you later. I'll just summarize the results that I just presented here. So these are our new results. And at one here is the signal strength, so the prediction from the standard model. And you see that they're pretty much compatible. In the case of CMS, they tend to have values that are larger than ours when ours are low and lower when ours are high. And in their global fit that they did this summer, they fit a signal strength of 1.00 plus or minus 10%. So we're in the process of fitting everything here, so we'll see what we get. But a global coupling will give us some value that's quite compatible, I think. So these were our old combination results. So BB in 70 EV, we have some negative results there, but it was 0.2, so that changed. So some of the results that changed were gamma-gamma. Went from 1.6, say, to 1.2. ZZ, essentially no change at all. And WW a little bit, and tau tau stayed the same also. A quick word on BSM physics. So we keep looking for another possible historic discovery. So we search, there are different ways to do that. So the first way is just to look for another Higgs boson. And we have an extensive search program looking at new scalars in many different final states. You can also search for exotic Higgs decays of the particle that we know is there, and that we're also working hard on. Or you can use this 125 GV Higgs as a tool to find new physics. So once you know that it exists, and you know that it can decay to, say, two photons, then it's like a new standard candle, a little bit like a Z boson, that you can look in decay chains. And this is illustrated here. In some examples, if you have the Higgs and you want to look for you want to look for two photons, then we should see some excess, perhaps with missing transverse energy and leptons. And so there are different ways in which we can do this. And here's a non-exhaustive list of the things that we're considering. I think we've worked on essentially everything that you have here. We will not necessarily publish everything that's here, but this is our program also for run two. So in the case of high mass searches, we were looking for Higgs to gamma gamma, WW, ZZ, and a bunch of different final states, tau tau, and associated production with two Bs, charged Higgs in a variety of channels. This one is we're working on now, et cetera, et cetera. Plus invisible Higgs decays. And so these are quite interesting. And we'll have a publication soon. So I'm going to flash four recent results on BSM searches. So the first one is an A to going to tau tau, where the A can be produced in association with the B quarks. So this gives you an idea of the range that we're reaching in, okay, we're using here some scenario of the MSSM, where on the x-axis you have MA, on y-axis you have tan beta. And so we'll be progressing here in run two, going at lower tan beta and higher mass. On the bottom, you have a search for charged Higgs. So here we have two ways of doing this. If the H plus is less, the mass is less than the top, then we look for the decay of the top to H plus. And if it's greater than the top mass, then we look for associated production. So typically with a top or two tops. And so we're looking for jets and leptons, et cetera. And we look for the tau new decay. And we've done a little bit of CS also. Okay, another thing that we've looked at is a search for Di Higgs. Yep. Yeah, we do. It's coming up, but it's not out yet. Yeah. So we've started to look at Di Higgs. So this is a channel that could be quite interesting at a high luminosity LHC. We have some projections on what we can do here to see this in the standard model. However, you can start to look at potential particles that we decay to two Higgses. And see if you see anything interesting. And so what you see here is the data. It clusters a little bit, as you can see, around 300 GeV. It's a bit of an excess. And here's how well we do with the modeling of, so this is a control region. On the bottom here is a search for diphotons, where we take into account, so we go at low mass, and we go at high mass, and we take into account the fact that there's a particle at 125, and we take into account the fact that there's a Z boson. Because the two electrons from the Z can give you two photons of the electrons Brehm. And so we're looking everywhere. And we haven't, yep. Here? Well, we'll keep looking, but as you can see, you can see the resolution, in fact, of the calorimeter, and you can see that the mass resolution is getting wider. The fact that it crosses often, you can use this to estimate what is the look elsewhere effect, how often this should go into the yellow. And so this is essentially what you expect. The largest deviation is here, actually. It's above two sigma. Yeah, but it's not yet significant. But we're looking, you know, because we're going to start the machine at higher luminosity, we're going to look at where these things and look right away. But I've done lots of diejets, resonances, and I've seen these things come and go too many times now. Okay, so what about run two? So in 5 minutes. So so this is the current plan. So we should get into low intensity commissioning in March, April. And then they will start physics, but just a few bunches, and we'll collect minimum bias events. Then they would like to do about a month running at 50 nanoseconds. So this is what we used in run one. And we'd like to go to 25 nanoseconds so that we can have less collisions per crossing. And they'll do that in July, and we should get about 2 inverse femtobarns. And then between July and the end of the year, they think they can deliver of order 10 inverse femtobarns. There's some uncertainty as to how well we can do here. So this number could be higher, could be lower. We don't know. Now, the detector is getting back to a fully operational state. So by the end of November, there will be 24/7 shifts already, quite before we start. We'll take cosmics. We have added a new tracking layer and a new beam pipe. So our innermost tracking layer will die from radiation quite soon. And so we've installed a new one. And to do that, we needed a thinner beam pipe to put it very close to the beam. Now, these numbers, you know, we'd like those to be as high as possible. 10 for vanilla Higgs physics is equivalent to maybe 20 inverse femtobarns, so the 2012 year. But if you're interested in high mass states, then you can get this can be 10 times or 100 times larger. It depends. If you're a strongly produced state in the multi TeV range, this is very large. For high mass Higgses, we get a factor of order 4 to 6. So we should be competitive once we get 5 inverse femtobarn, have better limits than we had in run one already. Okay, a quick word on what we can do going towards run three. So this is 300 inverse femtobarns. We should be running until 2018. There'll be another shutdown. Then we will collect 300 inverse femtobarns. So these are the uncertainties on the signal strength that we think we can achieve. And in blue is what we think we could achieve if we went to a high luminosity LHC. So we need to go into the 2030s to get there. But this is just a few years away. And you see that we should be in the 10% range for or less for most of those. Okay, and when you do combinations, you can do even better. Okay, so here are my conclusions. We're in the process of completing our Run 1 physics program. So we have of order 40 papers, and we've done about 15 to 20. So the rest of the 20 will come out in the next month to 1 to 3 months, maybe. The Higgs boson measurements are consistent with standard model predictions. Now, we want to test, of course, we want to test the standard model to a higher precision, and this will require a substantial effort in terms of improving our experimental techniques, the Monte Carlo generators, and also the theory calculations. So if you look at the WW result, most of the systematic is in the theory. So it's one thing to just collect data, but we need to make progress on the generators and on the theory calculations. So we have an exciting program for run two, and I thought I would add a Halloween conclusion too. So I don't know if you've seen this movie before, but right now it looks like we have a nightmare scenario. I replaced Elmer with Caroline, but I hope that we may wake up in run two and find something new, some kind of new physics. Okay, thanks. Yeah, I didn't discuss this, but yes, we have a. So we have direct bounds and indirect bounds, and our most sensitive channels. We're still working on them. The most sensitive direct channel is the VBF production of the Higgs that would decay invisibly. So we look for two jets that at very high mass and a lot of missing ET, and we've already published the ZH, where the H goes invisibly. We have a limit of order 60%. When we combine the results that we have with the direct results, we're at the level of 40 to 50%. And we should, well, we'll see what we get, but it will be of that order when we finish, maybe 30%. Mu plus, mu minus, if you go back to, I think I had it. Yeah. So.
Oh, so you'd be able to measure the 300, but to actually, yeah.
Well, it depends what you mean by seeing. So if you wanted evidence roughly, you need to be at 0.3 here. So that gives you a.
So you need more than 300.
Yeah.
So you need to be
that channel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will, these are projections, they're not that, I will say this, they're not very aggressive.
I was going
to
ask about it, because it looks too big.
Now, every time, I mean, when we sit down and we think about what we can do, we think in general we can do better. But they're, like for WW, I think we can do better. And this, I mean, on the reconstruction side, and also looking at different productions and splitting up like we do for the other channels, I think we can probably reach. We should be able to do better. But if you have ideas, we welcome any ideas. Yes.
So the pattern of the Higgs is obviously because of the
So this one will get new contributions actually, because with TTH that I didn't discuss, the production mode, it goes up by a factor of 4 in run 2. And so for every inverse femtobarns, you get a lot more. And we're looking for the associated production of tops, but then the decay going to BB. And so apart from this channel in run 2, we have also the TTH contribution to produce more.
And
it will contribute. So again, I think we can do better here.
Are there any other questions?
Okay, thank you.